Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and my co-host for another week is the delightful Jessica Baker. How are you, my dear friend?
I'm fabulous. I'm loving life.
Yeah, you seem so free and relaxed.
I am free. I vacuum packed my hospital scrubs and put them in the top of the cupboard today.
Work is done.
They're done.
You're officially on mat leave.
Yep.
But that doesn't stop you from serving the Lord here on the Big Three podcast.
That's right. And I'm on call now for my own birth, which sounds wild, but not on call for anyone else's, which
I'm
loving. Yeah, left my phone in the office with a cute little post-it note saying how much I loved my phone. There's no swear words involved. And just walked out.
Just see you later.
Yeah.
Not my problem.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
What a vibe.
Yeah.
So countdown's on where?
Countdown's not on yet.
No. I apologize.
Yeah.
Clearly, I don't know what I'm talking about.
I've got a lot to do, not much time to do it in, but I'm just trying to potter around.
You just finished renovations as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, time management done. On that one.
Just snuck in
Yep. Got it finished.
Yeah, it was cutting it fine.
Yeah. But it's extreme nesting for the baby. Let's just redo the bathroom.
Just gutter the whole house. Start again. Yeah, no, it's a good time. I'm loving. I feel a bit ripped off. The weather is really impeding on my mat leave vibes.
Really? I would imagine that would just reinforce Netflix and
yeah, tease. But that, I wanted to, I'm a midwife. I was trying to be a good girl in the end of pregnancy.
Do all the things.
Go for a walk every day, go swimming. None of that's happened.
Yeah.
I haven't moved my body
in
weeks.
Now you can blame it on rain instead of what you would have had to have blamed it on, which is just general laziness.
That's so true. Yeah.
We know you. Bless. Well, I'm glad that you're still here clinging on before this baby comes. Bless. Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Reeder, preached during our services this past weekend, continuing in our series, Discerning the Invitation of God Together. Mark spoke from the book of 2 Chronicles about the story of Jehoshaphat waiting on the Lord. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. And so today in the Big Three, we're going to keep the conversation going from Mark's message. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark, and Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But for now, Jess, I'm keen to hear your reflections on Raider's message from Sunday.
Mm. This story is huge.
It was a huge story.
What the heck? Who has this ability? I want to know. In the face of, an army coming towards them, everyone, we're just going to stop for a hot sec. And just have a little pray.
So a little bit of context. For anyone who might have missed the sermon, Jehoshaphat is king and bless him.
Yeah.
And an army's coming and they're real close to the city. Rather than fortifying the defenses, he just calls the entire people to pray and just wait.
Yeah, imagine if at the Battle of Helm's Deep.
To just bring it back to the Lord of the Rings.
The Uruk-hai are walking towards them. They can hear the horns. Nobody's called for Gondor to come. Oh, that's the next battle.
But anyway, you're getting your movies.
But none of them are on the lines, even the little old guy holding the boat. They're just all in the main house just praying.
Well, I don't know.
We'll be right.
Gandalf said on the third day, look to the east.
Yeah.
Was it that? Am I right?
Correct. But they haven't even called for Gandalf. Gandalf hasn't gone out to find the Rohirrim. Nothing.
So we're going to bring it back to the story.
That is an absolute, that's faith, isn't it?
No, it was crazy.
Yeah.
I also loved just the fact that obviously on Sunday, Mark did a lot of the backstory. He just kept going. We're talking decades and decades of history beforehand. But it was actually this wonderful kind of overarching picture of learning from the past and that shaping Jehoshaphat's response.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily his past, although that was part of it, but his father's past. And
that was heavy.
Yeah, that got rough.
Also, poor guy, he's probably it's just a bit of an ulcer on my foot. I won't concern God with this. I'll just go and see the local GP. God's smite you for not coming to me.
I don't think that was the point of the message, but yeah, sure.
But knowing that background of he's seen his dad not trust in the Lord at a certain point didn't work out heaps well for his dad.
Yeah.
Because he was dead. And then he's I'm not doing that again. Just a sore foot compared to an army coming, yeah, and he still maintained that
faithfulness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. Good. Huge story, huge story. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slider this week. So what are our big three, Jess?
Question one is, if rebuking helped Jehoshaphat turn from trusting in people and back to the Lord, should we be do more rebuking? Okay.
Heavy.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for that answer. No. People are going to be lining out my house. I got things to say, Matt Willis.
Question two, what can we take from this story about the immediate response to wait on God? Yeah, normally I like to consult God after I've put in an action plan.
But even just like, what does it look like to wait straight away, yeah, as well? Like,
yeah,
I, you know, I see a flashing light and I'm like, distracted, squirrel. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's wild. And question three, how long do we wait for God to answer?
That's a heavy one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, so can you hear the urukai at your front door and go, probably should now set up the bows? Or do we
wait until, yeah, they're literally climbing the,
yeah,
the fences?
Yeah, they've got the ladders coming up. Oh, gosh, terrifying. No, I just feel like watching Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Call it a spiritual practice.
Yeah, I think so.
Just reflecting on the invitation by watching Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
You've got time. You've got time.
I have so much time.
Oh, beautiful.
It's happening.
Well, before we start reenacting the Lord of the Rings, I think we should get Mark Rader out here. Mark, welcome to the big three.
Join us. You will join us in reenacting the Lord of the Rings.
Only on the third day, apparently. Yeah. All right, you guys.
Yeah, fab.
We're good. We're good. I think we're a little bit distracted because now we're all keen to go watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You're a bit of a Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
Huge fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't say a huge fan, but
like Jess Baker. That's okay.
Well, I don't know.
Did you wear the One Ring certified authentic memorabilia the whole way through high school around your neck?
Every day to school. Wow. You wore the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
The One Ring of power.
And to my year 12 formal. Year 12.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was a fully functioning 17-year-old. I wore the Light of the Even Star.
Oh, Arwen. Well done.
Yeah. And I got my now husband Aragorn's ring with the two serpents and the emerald. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. I'm cool.
There you go.
Wow.
There you go.
I'm cool.
Now, was this all because of the movies or had you read the books?
Yeah, I hated the books.
Okay.
That's
possibly where we differ.
It upset me too. I was 15 when I tried to read them.
Okay.
But I could probably go back and start again.
Mm.
But like if you take a page to describe a tree, like I'm not really into that.
But it starts slow.
Yeah.
And the ending's long.
Yeah.
I think they're excellent. My beef with the movies was actually that Peter Jackson, I should not say they, he.
Name and shame. Yes, here we are.
I think that in the retelling, well, some of it was absolutely fantastic cinematography-wise. I felt that they muted the strong theme of despair and hope that runs through all the characters. Like all the characters are described and defined by which side of the knife edge they fall on the need for hope and despair. And they kind of muted that a little bit in some of their bizarre kind of reimaginations of some of the characters. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, it's a question as old as time, which one's better, the book or the movie? Mm. And it feels like we're sitting on either ends of the spectrum here.
Another knife's edge.
Another knife's edge.
But we do digress this
I'll
time.
I'll just be Switzerland, don't be.
I like Harry Potter.
No truer words.
Well, and we're gone.
Before this podcast becomes like a movie critique, let's get into the big three. So, Mark, a big part of Jehoshaphat's storyline and kind of his preparation to being, I guess, the faithful man that he was in 2 Chronicles chapter 20 was that he himself had a time during his reign where he had kind of turned away from God and he was rebuked and kind of received that rebuke. So if rebuking helped Jehoshaphat turn from trusting in people and back to the Lord, should we be doing more rebuking?
Yeah, you first. is that how that works? Yeah. I'm happy to rebuke you. That's, you know, or Peter Jackson, or you know. Yeah, I mean, I think two things. I mean, I'll start with the passage itself. I mean, I think it's interesting the way the story is told because he's rebuked by the prophet. We're not actually told his response at all. So we're not told whether Jehoshaphat was like, I'm sorry.
My bad.
My bad. Or whether he was like his father had been when his father had been rebuked, whether he was cranky.
Yeah.
But all we have is the rebuke. And then the very next thing he does is he goes out to the towns and turns their hearts back to the Lord. So you kind of.
We can assume.
Yeah. And I think it's important to, you know, and this is why I wanted to start with it. I think when we're reading scripture, it's really important to kind of pay attention to some of the gaps in it. Yeah, because often scripture, I think, invites us into those silences, right? So we just read that he got rebuked. And I think we need to stop and go, how would I have gone with that?
Yeah.
Mm. Like, here I'm the king.
Mm.
I've just come back from what, you know, was, you know, this alliance with the north that we haven't had since the division of the kingdom. Like, there's all sorts of good that could come out of this, theoretically. Yeah. And I've just been rebuked. How do I respond to that? And then pay attention to the fact that we don't really know, but we're given some indicators. I think there's something really quite significant in just kind of how we read scripture in that sense. But to the question, should we be rebuking more frequently? I think I would probably flip it a little bit, and I would say that I think that we need to be seeking out correction more frequently.
Mm, very nice.
There we go. Mm. So rather than like
taking it upon ourselves,
some unsolicited feedback that I just want to, I got a list that I want to run through.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more what do I need to hear?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do I take that? Making sure you're kind of ready to receive feedback if it does come unsolicited.
Well, feedback is such the politically correct term as well. Yeah,
well, you know, and I think that's where I'd want to steer away a little bit from the rebuke language because I think that, you know, feedback's often thought of as being negative anyways. Mm-hmm. Rebuke would certainly be, you know.
It's never a good time.
That's right. And even correction, I mean, suggests that, you know, we were doing something wrong or we've been headed in the wrong direction or whatever the case might be. But, you know, all the way through the book of Proverbs, for instance, one of the key indicators of a wise person, like if you want to know, am I on the path to wisdom? One of the indicators is how do you respond to correction? Because the wise, the thing you always hear about the wise in scripture is, they love to be rebuked. They love to be corrected. Mm. They delight when someone pulls them aside and says, hey, there's a better way to live. There's, you know, you're. And so I think if we want to know, am I progressing towards wisdom? We have to be asking the question, how do I respond when I am corrected?
Mm.
Now, you know, sometimes the correction can be given in a way that's
unhelpful,
right? It's kind of like feedback, right? There's often a kernel of truth in it, although sometimes we have to kind of peel back the layers of our anger to get at it because the way it was delivered was not timely, not particularly kind, or whatever the case might be. So there's certainly those things. But I reckon that the best answer to it is that we need to find some people in our lives who we can ask, would you, you know, what do you reckon? Here's my life. You know my life.
Mm.
Where do you reckon I need to change?
Yeah.
What do you think needs to change? Or where would you want to challenge me on something? Mm. You know, in terms of what you watch me do, what you hear me say, how you watch me behave. Or is there an area where you would say to me, hey, sometimes when you do these things makes me uncomfortable, or I know you want to be a follower of Jesus, but when I see you respond this way, so you need to have, you know, to go back to the discipleship series we did last year, it's the you and a few.
Mm. Yeah, right? Pick your person to ask that question to.
Oh, totally. You don't want to kind of stand up in the church service and say, hey, just general announcement, I'm open for correction and rebuke.
I'll send a hand around the mic.
That's right. We'll go alphabetically, shall we? You know, and I even in a life group, that's probably too big a group. But if there were one or two people that you could ask and say, listen, you know, and I did some study and feedback, and you know, one of the most helpful things about feedback is if you want the feedback yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the things that I would say to someone who is looking for feedback in any part of their life would be to be specific, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want some feedback in this area.
Mm.
And that allows us to kind of, shall we say, be in a little bit of control of the feedback, yeah. right? If I just kind of go, okay, folks, what do you reckon? Where do I need to change? I mean, A, I'm probably not going to want to take everything that everyone says, right?
Mm.
But if I can be able to say, listen, I want to consider my use of humor, or I want to be considering my response under pressure, or you know, something that people would have to be fairly close to me to necessarily see.
Mm-hmm.
And asking someone, I'm a follower of Jesus, you know I'm a follower of Jesus.
Mm.
Are there areas in this space, in this part of my life, where you might have some questions? And again, even that is kind of, it's an invitation for them not to necessarily say, I'm so much better than you, or I'm so much farther ahead than you, or I've got it all together and you don't. Mm-hmm. But just to be able to say, here's some feedback. I noticed that when this happens, you tend to act like, or you respond in such and such a way, or, you know, to allow that, I think would be really, really beneficial.
I thought
for
you'd
us.
Never ask.
Yeah. Well, that might be an interesting response too. So I think, yes, we should seek out correction, because correction is valuable. For us, it allows us to evaluate where we're at against where we're trying to be. So I think that that's really valuable. And it also allows us, if we're seeking it out, it allows us to ask the questions, you know, if I flip it back to Jehoshaphat, that aren't answered in Jehoshaphat, right? Because he had unsolicited feedback.
Mm.
The prophet met him when he came home and basically said, what the heck are you thinking? Should you befriend people who are the enemies of God? Like, what are you doing? But if we are seeking it out, then we can be kind of asking ourselves some of those questions of the heart, like, do I really want to hear this feedback?
Yeah.
Because if I don't want to hear it, I'm not going to ask it, right? So it allows us to say, do I really want to hear this feedback? Yes, I do. What's the most important area for me? Where do I suspect? Because that's the other thing. Like, we could probably ask some people and say, what do you think about how I respond in this way? And I think it's unlikely that we're going to be surprised.
Yeah.
By the answers. Like, I don't think we'll get blindsided by our close friends or family members kind of naming something.
Mm.
It might happen. We might kind of go, I hadn't realized that that's how I came across, or how that was received, or the way that you feel about that. But generally speaking, we're going to have a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
But then it implies some accountability. Like, there's a whole bunch of good stuff that I think comes out of that.
Yeah, and you should tell them, if you name something, you have to help me with it. Like, don't just drop it and run. You suck at this. Okay, bye.
Well, but again, I think that's the whole you and a few. Like, they're people that you have an ongoing relationship with, right? Like, I think that's one of the reasons that often feedback's not super helpful, because it's someone with whom we have no relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're not particularly interested in helping us improve. I'm sure in some cases.
It is a bit of a drop and run.
Yeah. In some cases, they might be willing to help us, but and other times, they might not be the right person or might not have the right expertise. And our friends may not either, but at least, you know, we can ask them, hey, can you be praying for me?
Yeah.
Can I get you to ask me on it? Can I get you to, you know, give me a little secret handshake if you see me doing that, you know, again, or some sort of little signal, like, you know.
The horn of God's door.
Yeah.
And we're back. I was thinking something a little more subtle, but, you know, like.
Just across the auditorium on Sunday evening at church.
Yeah, cough twice and touch your ear or something. But, maybe not cough because it's COVID, but, you know, so.
It's a dangerous activity.
Yeah, that's right.
So this whole thing gives me anxiety. Yeah. I don't like it. And maybe that means I'm not a wise person. But my self-esteem is so low already that if you give me an ounce of feedback, I'm a crippling mess in the corner.
But it's also, like, it's so foreign, isn't it? Like, like society in itself, like, this is not a practice that people would regularly participate in. Like, I remember when I was doing my postgrad in counselling, we had to learn. Like, we spent weeks giving feedback. Like, how do you challenge someone? And then you would have loved this, Jess. You then had to receive a challenge from every single person in the class. They literally made a circle and you had to go around the circle.
Wow.
And they had to write it down and hand it to you.
In high school, in my little girls club, 8Y7G, because we were 8 Year 7 girls, we had a little time at lunch called Friendship Revival Survival. I came up with it, unfortunately, where you would say one thing you like about each person and then two things you didn't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so that's
really...
probably where it's come from, actually.
Call those me kinds a counselor. But...
as young people that make us avoidant of receiving feedback.
So I feel like that's quite similar to what you did in your uni degree.
Except without the training on how to do it properly.
Yeah.
It was supervised in my situation.
Yeah, it got real rough when the two things I didn't like were really specific.
Yeah.
And the thing that I liked was, oh, you're really funny. It was rough. That group broke up. You'd be surprised to hear.
So surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. So no longer a part of AY7G.
Well, there you go. I mean, I do think part of it is how we think about feedback, because I think we do tend to think that it's negative.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, if we're talking about, you know, correction, if we're talking about being helped to strengthen our faith, to deepen our relationship with Jesus, to more clearly demonstrate that commitment in our day-to-day lives, I think there's some scope to be thinking, okay, what do I want out of this relationship?
Mm.
And then to ask some specific questions, and even to say, you know, I want to, you know, if you picked a virtue that you were trying to work on, you know, like, I want to be more patient. Can you give me one way that you think that I could probably improve on, and one area where you think that I've got some promise in my patience, right? Like,
just to boost your self-esteem.
Just a bit of a spin.
Well, because there's a sense then that sometimes we can miss it, right? Mm. So I say, oh, like, I'm so impatient. I get so angry so quickly at this, that, or the other thing. And we get so down in ourselves that we don't actually see that in some circumstances or in some situations, we're actually really quite patient.
Mm.
And you kind of go, oh, okay, so I am, like, maybe there's some growth, or maybe I need to kind of incorporate some of where the circumstances where I'm good at being patient into some of those circumstances where I'm not so good. How can I think about those? And so I think there's plenty of ways for us to receive both positive and more constructive correction. You know, but again, in terms of answering the question, yes, we should at least seek out rebuke. Probably.
But don't give Christians the license to just rebuke people left, right, and center. So we don't want to up the rebuking. We want to up the
we want to up the wisdom.
Yeah.
The intentionality of seeking correction in our pursuit of wisdom as those who fear the Lord.
Yeah. But that's not on you, Karen, to suddenly start rebuking. That's on me to come to you and ask what's up.
Wow. That escalated really quickly.
Just to really...
Yeah,
she's speaking from a place of hurt there, I think.
Don't suddenly come at me. We've all established that I can't handle it, but I'll work on it.
We've become a meme.
Yeah. So before we trigger Jess anymore, let's move on to question two.
This story is so wild to me that Jehoshaphat the king, he's got an army coming towards him. They're like 10 days away. They're bigger than they can handle. And instead of trying to get more supplies and a strategy and reinforce the gates or whatever, all that kind of stuff, he kind of takes everyone, the women, children, men, into the town square, I suppose, and says, let's have a pray. What can we take from this story about the immediate response to wait on God?
Yeah. There's the two components of it. So, like, in the message, I focused on the long term, right? You know, that Jehoshaphat had demonstrated a humility of attitude towards rebuke, for instance, and that he had done the hard work to make sure the people had the means and the to follow after the Lord and all of those sorts of things. And so there is this kind of preparation for the crisis that happens prior to. But in the crisis, there's still a crisis, you know. And so there's something about their response, which I think is quite remarkable. And then there's the response. And as you say, you know, they gathered in what would have been probably one of the largest spaces in Jerusalem, really, in which it was the temple courtyard. So it was in the context of worship. And if you read through the story, and I didn't draw a lot of attention to this, there's actually quite a bit of worship in the story. So when the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Jehaziel, I think it is, the Levite, who kind of says, yep, God's got this, it's his battle, you won't have to do a thing. Jehoshaphat's response is to bow down and worship, and I think the people do as well. And then when they head out the next day, he consults the people and they say, we should get some people singing. And so they put some Levites out the front and they start singing what looks suspiciously like part of the refrain, at least, of Psalm 136, whether it is or not, we have no idea to know. And it's as they begin to worship that kind of, shall we say, in the meantime, God was sowing chaos amongst their enemies. And so there's a real amount, and I think at the end, after they kind of arrive there and they go, wow, God did it, they celebrate and worship again. Mm-hmm. So there's a real important piece about worship, not in the sense of necessarily singing, but that sense of turning our hearts to God. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that, of course, I think there's like a really strong theme of gratitude, right? An acknowledgement of who God is. Mm-hmm. So like it's interesting that Jehoshaphat's prayer doesn't start with their problem even. Mm. Like he delays the problem till the end, right? And you're just like, oh man, I'd be so tempted to say, God, it's me. Guess what? No, you know, 000, you know?
Things have escalated.
Yeah. But they just start with kind of a, you know, God, you're amazing. You're great. And all the nations bow to you and... You know,
except these ones that are coming for us.
Yeah, but he knows, see? He delays. Know. You know, and he's like, and you brought us out of Egypt just like you promised Abraham. And so that there's this long reflection on the past, which of course places them in a situation of gratitude and of reflection on what God has done. And so I think there's something really powerful about that, that in the midst of crisis, they don't start with the crisis, they start with God. Mm. And that's even indicated in, you know, the decision that they make to fast. It's one of the few places, interestingly, where the people fast and pray in the midst of a military crisis, at least where it's recorded. I mean, I'm sure it happens in other places. But the people of Judah very rarely are called to fast and to pray. But there was some sort of recognition that this was obviously serious enough that they wanted to demonstrate their commitment to God. So in a few places where fasting is used, it's not just a self-discipline issue, right? When you, like, we're in the season of Lent now, so some of our listeners may have actually started fasting from something over in the preparation for Easter, maybe not. And so sometimes that's seen as kind of self-discipline and as a way for us to kind of turn our hearts to God a little bit. And I think it's the second of those that are actually more important. It's that statement of, you know what, food's really important. We need it every day. We're just going to not to right now. And
not the most wise pre-war prep to get your soldiers real weak.
Yeah, that's right.
And then off you pop.
I thought that as well, actually, when I was kind of working through the sermon. I just thought, that is a weird...
That's a silly choice.
...strategy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so there was something about their willingness to say, what's more important is right, we just want to seek God. And so there's a sense of kind of highlighting their commitment to God, recognizing their need. You know, in a society like theirs, people were probably a lot closer to starvation than we would be for skipping a meal or two or three or whatever they may have done. We don't know how long the fast was or what it was for or any of those sorts of things, but so they fasted. Mm. And, you know, I think that, you know, for us as a community of faith, as we get closer, you know, towards the end of the year and our focus day, I think we'll probably encourage people to fast. Mm. You know, here and there or for a period of time. So I think, like, there'll be some time for us to explore that a little bit more, but I think that's a quite significant piece. Mm. The context of worship, as I've mentioned, I think is quite striking as well. And then, you know, just the waiting. You know, they didn't just kind of pray and say, so we're just going to get the army out and start strengthening the walls and call for some alliances and just, you know, just want to keep you up to speed on it, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a internal memo to let you know what our plans were. There really was that commitment to wait. Mm. And, you know, I love the idea that it includes the people and that there's that reference to all the men of Judah with their wives, their children, and their little ones.
Mm.
You know, like I just see this big group of people. It's kind of the music stopped. The prayer has been prayed. The sacrifices have been made. And then they're just there. And you got a couple of kids crying and, you know. And,
little Sunday school being set up the back.
Well, almost. As they just kind of wait on the Lord. And it's just remarkable in that way. I think that, you know, that Jehoshaphat's role in that there is some leadership in that space. Mm-hmm. So like he has called the people, and, you know, the people that he has spent time preparing, shall we say, you know, like teaching and making sure that they were equipped to follow the Lord. He, you know, but he does give leadership, like he calls them together. This is what we're going to do. We're going to inquire of the Lord. And the people kind of respond with a, yeah, we want to do the same thing. So there's opportunity, but involvement. The fact that, you know, he leads the prayer, probably appropriate as the king to do that. But there's nonetheless leadership in that space, leadership in terms of worship. Consultation, though, over how we're going to march out, which is, like, again, I was just like, what do you mean you consulted with the people? But it makes perfect sense because there was no real army to know, right?
What did, like, that consultation look like? Like, do we want to be a U formation or a V for victory? And just kind of speak that into reality. I don't know. Straight lines are good.
You know, and so, you know, as the army marches out, you know, there's obviously some sort of military something or other, but it's so understated in the text. I think it's quite remarkable. So, you know, I think there's lessons in that about the involvement of as many people as you can have. Like, it wasn't just Jehoshaphat and the prophet kind of going, oh God, we're in all sorts of trouble, so we'd love for you to help us. And it's not just the people. It's kind of this combination. I think there's a bunch of stuff in that for us to think about how we respond. You know, about the role of leadership and the role of involvement and, you know, the place of spiritual practices such as fasting, the importance of worship and how it focuses our hearts on what God has done and who he is in the midst of the crisis. And yeah, so I think there's some wonderful lessons. You know, I probably could have preached a series, small series just on 1 Chronicles 20. So.
Well, before you start that now, let's move on to question three. So, Mark, I guess leading from that conversation in question two, like, this could be a long answer, or I guess it could be a short one, but I think it's an important question. How long do we wait for God to answer?
Give us an exact number of minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that what we want?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Just give me a black and white. It's like the question for me of giving. You know, it's just like, wouldn't it be nice if the Bible just said there's a scale at the back in Appendix 1.
It would be.
How much do you make against gross national product? And you, pop that in, and this will pop out exactly what you need to give to be pleasing to the Lord. Yeah. It's like, no, Jesus just shows up saying, just be generous. I'm like, oh, can you just put a dollar figure on that? I think the same is true with things like waiting. How long do you wait? You know, and I think that the simple answer, which I think we could all probably give, is as long as it takes, I suppose. I think we want to be people who are willing to wait. But, you know, you think about the 80 kilometers or so that this foreign army was from the gate. And, you know, to your point earlier, Jess, how close does the army get before you have to start making
plans.
Some plans?
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of that. Kind of it's a fable of sorts, but, you know, of a man who was, you know, probably inappropriate for us at this point in time, but his house was flooded, and so he climbs onto the roof and, you know, he prays to God, come and rescue me. And someone goes by in a canoe and says, hey, we got space, do you want to get in? He says, no, I'm waiting for the Lord to rescue me. And then, okay, fine, off they go. And then a motorboat comes across and says, hey, do you want to get in? We got some space. He goes, no, I'm waiting for the Lord. And helicopter comes and says, hey, do you want to get up? He says, no, I'm fine, I'm waiting for the Lord. And then he dies, sees God in heaven and says, well, what was that all about? Like, why didn't you save me? And God's like, well, I sent a canoe and a boat and a helicopter.
Yeah.
You know, and so at some point in time, I think, you know, the kind of the whole point of the fable is at some point in time, we have to start saying, what can I do?
Yeah.
Or where might the ordinary hand of God be at work here, right? You know, like, oh, look, it's a motorboat. Not particularly supernatural, but it may indeed be the very provision of God.
Yeah, I'm not parting the Red Sea here, but...
Yeah. And so I think that there's... And I think that there's in that sits our dilemma, right? How long would Jehoshaphat and the people of God waited? And to some degree, it's the question of how long could they wait?
Yeah.
You know, at some point, they would have to defend the city. At some point, they would have to send the army out to meet this overwhelming odd.
But would that have been wrong?
Yeah, like, that's great.
Here's the complexity of it, right? Yes. Like, so say they could finally see the army coming down the hills, would it have been wrong to stop waiting in that moment and go, okay, guys, get the swords? And like, Yeah, like what do you do with that?
But is the Lord sending a clear message at that point of like, they're coming, come on. I haven't stopped them.
That's heavy though, because we are told to wait, and we were waiting. We were doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Why would he do that? Why, Jess?
I do not know. Mark?
Well, see, I've often thought the same about when Jesus is asleep in the boat and the storm comes up and it's so bad that the boat's swamped. Jesus is still sleeping and they wake him up and they're like, we're drowning. Mm. Like, don't you care? And Jesus like calms the storm and goes like, do you have no faith?
Mm.
And I've always thought like, what were they supposed to do?
That's rough.
Like, how long were they supposed to wait?
Talk about rebuke.
Like, were they supposed to wait until Jesus finally woke up, even though the storm hadn't woken him up, the boat being swamped hadn't woken him up? I'm sure that they weren't silently bailing water going, shh, Jesus is asleep. Keep it down. Like, I'm pretty sure they were yelling and carrying on. Nothing had woken Jesus up. When, at what point exactly were we supposed to say, no, we're good. Just keep rowing.
And I mean, it's easy for Jesus to not be scared. He can just walk on the water. Yeah. Like, everyone else is like treading water, like trying to keep their head above the surface. Yeah,
and I think it feels like that's kind of a similar question here. And I, you know, I think, you know, to your point, Matt, I think they weren't, Jehoshaphat and the people were not actually told to wait. They chose to wait as a demonstration of their trust. All right, so what Jehoshaphat's dad Asa had been kind of rebuked for had been there's a military threat from the north, and he solved it on his own without any consultation with God or through his prophets or any of that. He just kind of went, oh, well, I know how to solve this. I'll just contact the king to the north, and we'll have a little arrangement, and it'll all work out nicely for me. That's what he's rebuked for.
Mm.
He wasn't told. You know, it wasn't that you didn't wait. It was this idea that you just didn't rely on me. You didn't even think to turn to me.
Yeah.
And so I think what Jehoshaphat and the people of Judah do is demonstrate their willingness to turn first to God and to allow him to speak or to lead or to rescue or to advise or whatever.
Mm.
And then at a certain point in time for them to go, okay, we brought it before the Lord.
Mm.
We're relying on the Lord.
Yeah.
Let's arm up and believe that God's going to be with us as we head out. Because there's no sense. See, I mean, again, this would have been part of the series. This external threat is not because they've been sinful.
Yeah.
Right? What happens just beforehand is Jehoshaphat goes out and turns their hearts to the Lord and appoints judges and Levites to teach and you know, the whole kind of thing. So in terms of, they can't even come and say, oh Lord, we're sorry for our sinfulness that has led to this disaster. No, it's an external threat that just has arisen, shall we say, out of nowhere. So they just show up and say, okay, here it is. And I think there's something really powerful in that ability, in that willingness to say, before I panic, before I plan, because, you know, God gives us a brain to use and common sense to use and wisdom to use.
Yeah.
And like, it's not as if any solution we come up with is somehow immoral or wicked or evil. It's probably flawed, but you know, it's kind of part of the package, right? You know, but there is something about stopping first and saying, okay, Lord, we're giving you an opportunity to speak into this situation. We're going to give you an opportunity to advise us on what we ought to do and then to wait. So I don't know that there is a specific answer. I'm not sure it's a matter of how long you wait. I think the important thing is that you take some time to wait, you know, that you're actually pausing to say, God, do you have something to say to me here?
Yeah.
Is there something I got to hear before we go rushing off and making plans? And you know, again, as I said on Sunday, I'd love to be this poised.
Yeah.
You know, in the midst of a crisis to go, you know what? It's a crisis. There's a lot to do. There's a million things to do before we start doing the million things that need to be done. But we're just going to pause and we're going to pray and we're going to focus on God and we're just stand and listen.
Yeah.
Got some time to wait and, you know, there's time to panic later.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so I think it's more a matter of not how long do we wait. It's a matter of are we willing to wait, you know?
But I also think like, so yes, he was poised. The people were poised in their waiting. But it was also like, and then when they got the response, like some bloke in the crowd just goes, oh, Holy Spirit just told me everything's fine, guys. Yeah. Old mate Jezza is just having a moment.
Yeah.
And no one batted an eyelid. No one was like, that sounds ridiculous. We'll just keep waiting for the right answer. Yeah. They're all like, oh, sounds good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's go.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, it's the willingness to rely on God and to trust his answer. Because I mentioned this on Sunday, there was no sign. He doesn't say, and this is how you know this will happen. Yeah. You know, that tree will wither, or the sun will go back 3 hours, or something.
Yeah.
It's just exactly.
Yeah.
My name's Jehaziel. I believe that this is what God is saying to us.
Jez, we call him Jez. Those of us who know him.
That's right. Jez.
Jay-Z.
Gotta love an Australian culture. The Bible would certainly read differently.
Would it ever?
I'm here for that translation.
Yeah, that's some good translation.
I think there is a version of the Gospels that was done in like Auckland, Australia. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just done
in Bogan. Yeah, the BIV. but I think there's just an extraordinary capacity then to trust that word, because it was a little bit extraordinary.
Yeah.
Just go, you won't even need to fight.
How do you not have doubt in that moment?
Yeah. But they're like, okay, we waited on God. He said this, so that's what we're going to go with.
So did they bring any weapons out, or they just brought their tambourines for the worship
yeah,
set?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well,
like, I mean, how much did they really trust that word from Jay-Z?
I mean, I reckon that, I mean, we are told that they put the singers out at the head of the army, which is the only reference I could find to the army.
Again, so not a great strategy.
No, so I'm assuming that
they
brought the army out and marched out, but I think the telling of the story, it puts the emphasis on the people's response.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it ended the way God said it would end. Mm. So they got there and just kind of went, oh, look at that. And then, it was the plunder. And even it doesn't refer to the army. It just talks about the people of Judah collecting it all and bringing it back. I think that they probably had some sort of, not a backup plan, but they probably went out armed for battle because it was a battle. Mm. But it does read a little bit like the people of Israel at the Red Sea. Did they have an army? Well, a few chapters later in Exodus, they do get attacked by the Amalekites, and Joshua leads the battle.
Yeah.
So they must have had weapons. But when they're on the shores of the Red Sea, Moses just says, hey, God's going to do this. You just watch. Mm. And we don't get any impression that they were like arming up or getting ready to face the Egyptians. It reads very much the same.
Yeah.
And God just takes care of it. So there's this kind of remarkable moment of rescue. So how long do you wait? I think the important thing is that we take some time to wait. Mm. And then I think we probably have to use a little bit of our common sense, and kind of go, okay, sought the Lord. And I don't think it's a matter of we seek the Lord and then we stop seeking the Lord and just get on with our plans, because that doesn't feel right either. But I think there's a matter of saying, okay, Lord, here's the situation we find ourselves in, and this is what we're waiting on you. And now we're going to proceed in as godly a fashion as we can.
Yeah.
We're gonna keep touching base. We want to keep listening, but moving forward. So I think those feel to me like the sorts of principles that a group in particular would want to carry on. Because I think we can sometimes get frozen by the waiting too. You just end up waiting forever.
Mm.
You don't get anything done. And sometimes the canoe and the boat and the helicopter have passed, and we've kind of missed the opportunities because we're too busy kind of, no, it has to be this way. It has to be that way. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
Mm.
Well, thanks so much, Mark.
Yeah, no, thank you, guys.
Enjoying this series?
Yeah.
I think you've done a good job.
Oh, well, thank you.
Just a little bit of feedback for you.
It's always nice when a series kind of feels like it's timely.
Yeah.
And I think given what we're doing as a community of faith, it certainly feels timely. And I think there's something, I enjoy preaching in that space then too, because it's like, oh, this is not, we're not, I mean, it's important to teach the Bible, but
we're not just shooting the breeze.
We haven't just picked a passage at random. No, we're actually looking at these things because we want to try to answer some of the questions for ourselves. Mm. So I think it's been good fun.
Watch
so.
This space.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, thanks for coming.
See you guys.
All right, Jessica Baker, what was your standout? What did you take out of that conversation?
I'm still just like absolutely dumbfounded at their response. And it's, it's really challenging, because I think these things, like, it's easy to rely on the Lord when you literally have nothing, like when a situation is so hopeless, like you've got nothing to offer.
Mm.
But then trying to bring that into your everyday or just the things that you could definitely manage by yourself but probably should involve the Lord, like those grey areas, that would be tricky to do. So making this kind of like a routine practice of turning towards God, not just when things are, you know, like the night before an exam when you haven't studied. Like,
I'm just waiting on the Lord.
Yeah. Like that's not the time to turn away, but just the little things, where you could manage it by yourself, but like an ulcerous foot or whatever, I don't know.
Like a what?
Like a diseased foot. Oh, also, yeah.
Right. Well, we're back to this again. Yeah, very good.
I'm really hung up on how did he die? Really stood what out was to you. That?
I don't know. Maybe he went gangrenous.
He's a chain smoker.
I don't. Oh gosh.
What stood out for you?
Yeah, thanks. Listen, I think that whole conversation about seeking out correction, I just like it seems so countercultural. So if it is going to be a practice that we do, it's going to require, I think, a lot of effort and a lot of intentionality, and a lot of courage, really, because you're right. Like,
I'm not into it.
Yeah, it's scary stuff to kind of allow yourself to be vulnerable in that way, and to even people that you trust and know and whose opinion has value, even that is still kind of like it's a bit raw, and you're kind of really exposing the itty gritty parts of yourself, and yeah. So, but at the same time, you know, it changed the outcome, not just for Jehoshaphat, but for an entire nation. You know, if we're people who are really considering both our strengths and our weaknesses, then we're going to be the better for it, both in our individual faith, but then in how that faith then impacts those around us. So, I mean, it's interesting. My my mentor has actually challenged me to do this around my leadership. So get 4 or 5 people to...
I'd be happy to be one of those people. Yeah.
Coincidentally, I was going to ask you. But yeah, like I've done a whole bunch of like personality stuff and like it's just really exposing like, hey, this is what some of these surveys have said are my strengths and my weaknesses. Can you see these weaknesses in my leadership? And he asked me to do it in November and it's March and I have not. So, and we might say that I've been avoiding that and just use the Christmas break as an excuse, but it's March now. We're almost at Easter.
Is Mark one of your people that you've picked? Because he's going to follow you up on this
now. I know. That's what I mean. It's scary.
Yeah. So, look, I think instead of reading the discipleship menu this week, if everyone could just watch last night's episode of Maths, really relatable to this current situation.
I just don't think really we want relatable. To encourage people to watch that trash.
Trash? What do you mean? It's speaking into this passage.
Not in any good way. Now, before you lead anyone else astray, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services on Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big 3 podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big 3 and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.